Hello, and welcome to another TRADOC Leader Professional Development Discussion. I'm Gary Lowton-Beckford, Plans Chief for the Public Affairs Directorate and moderator for today's event. We have a special guest from the private sector that we'll introduce in a few moments. Our host for today's Leaders Professional Development is Mr. Michael Formica, Executive Deputy to the Commanding General. Mr. Formica.
Wow. Gary, first of all, I appreciate all that the Communications Directorate team does to pull these things together. And Nathan, thank you for joining us today. This is going to be a great session. And I think all of the Army civilian professionals and soldiers that are watching are going to enjoy and learn from. So thank you and looking forward to the conversations today.
You're welcome.
Mr. Formica, thanks for joining us. We have a highly touted motivational speaker today. Nathan Whitaker is a motivational speaker, the co-author of 8 New York Times bestsellers, a Super Bowl champion. Mr. Whitaker has spoken to corporations, sports teams, and trade associations across the country and world, including the Miami Dolphins, the Duke Business School's Leadership Symposium, the International School of Bangkok, and delivered numerous commencement addresses. Mr. Whitaker received his undergraduate degree from Duke University, Master of Science degree from Florida, the University of Florida, and a graduate of Harvard Law School. He's co-authored 7 books with retired NFL coach Tony Dungy, and he's co-authored 2 books with former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow. Thank you for taking time to join with us and share your personal experiences as it relates to mentor leadership.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gary. Pleased to be here.
Now, before we get started, I just want to remind everyone that we want you to join us on the discussion. Please leave your questions for the panel in the comment section, and we'll try to get them answered during the show. So off camera, we were talking about, and it's something for all of the entire audience to hear, but off camera, we're talking about coaching and mentorship, and then what are the two differences. Mr. Formica,
I appreciate it, and I think we had a good conversation about this, and it's one that I've asked myself a number of times, and I think probably over the last 15 years or so, I began to fully appreciate the difference, and really, when you think of a coach, and we expect supervisors to coach as well, but you think of somebody that's directly involved with enabling an individual to do better at whatever their duties are or the tasks are, and is looking at them from a perspective of, you did this, have you thought about doing it that way? But it's focused on pretty much the here and now and the limitations of those duties. So that's kind of how I've learned to appreciate coaching. And mentorship is more about, I think, through your example and through your involvement with civilian or with a soldier, how you want to help them to aspire what they want to do in life or the next part of their life as a minimum. That in my mind is mentorship. And usually it can be formal, it can be informal. We'll talk some about that, but that's sort of kind of what how I've differentiated them. As we were talking off camera, Nathan offered an interesting perspective from his profession of how he's seen it. So Nathan, I'd just turn it over to you to share that with us as well.
Sure. No, as we shared, I thought that was a great example and a great way to differentiate between the two, because I had a supervisor when I first entered the NFL who was very focused on the coaching aspects, and that was great. We would do mock negotiations. He'd say, okay, pretend you're representing a third round draft pick and I'll be the agent. So we had to do this over and over. So you'd call and call it as with my hand across the table and and you'd go through and say, hey, I'm Nathan Whitaker and et cetera, et cetera. And he'd come back with, well, let's not talk about a 3-year deal. Let's talk about a 4-year deal or whatever. And then the next time I'd call, I'd no sooner get my name out and he'd cut me off and say, I'm not talking to you. I want to talk to the GM. And so I had to learn how to handle all those things. But then the mentoring and the how I really wanted to behave as a professional and the personal life and how that tied in was a very different story. So we'll just leave it at that. But there are times when the coaching might be perfect and you realize, okay, but I'm not sure I'm getting anything here. And I think it's important to think through the difference between the two. Are we teaching people just skills, but are we also teaching them about the personal, professional, and how they might make their life work and their place in the organization function better? So I think it's a great example.
Yeah, super. Thank you.
Absolutely. And Mr. Formica, could you share, you know, your insights on the importance of mentoring, of a mentoring culture within organizations, particularly, you know, TRADOC, and how it contributes to professional development?
Yeah, well, first of all, the Army is people. That is the most important element of the United States Army is our soldiers and our Army civilian professionals. And mentoring demonstrates, first of all, a commitment to your people. We have a saying in the Army, right? It's mission first, people always, right? And so it is a way of directly influencing and improving the aspect of an individual's life. And as Nathan just said, it can be professional and it can also be personal, and it is your direct involvement. And I think it's foundational to any organization being solid. If you don't fully appreciate inside of your team the goals and aspirations of each of the individuals, and I'll define team as it can be the small group or the larger organization, then I think we're missing something. And that mentorship really helps inspire them and enable them to do all that, you know, they want to do for the Army and for themselves as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore. And then Nathan, you know, from your background, you know, the key qualities or attributes, you know, that defines a successful mentor. I mean, what have you seen the qualities or attributes that makes a mentor successful or great?
I think a lot of those are similar to things that make effective leaders. But I think that character, you know, you all talk a lot about character here in the Army and what you're doing and in the armed services, and how best we can be people of character. And that was a big deal with the Bucks. We had a do not draft because of character, DNDC. Oh, yeah. And we would take people off the board and that was, everybody was happy with that until the first draft when the owner walked in and went, wait, we're not going to draft them. And Tony said, no, there's not enough character there. So character, trust, I think is important, patience, empathy, to be able to understand that somebody's coming from somewhere different, as Michael just said a minute ago, that you know, here I'm trying to understand your whole life and how this works and how you bring all these other things to bear. And so I think the ability to work with people and understand that people are flawed, but I'm going to try to help you and I'm going to try to mentor you through whatever you're going through and understand that. So I think those are some of the qualities that would come to mind for me: trust, character, patience, empathy.
I just echo all of that. I mean, Nathan could have, you know, just read a page out of an Army leadership manual. Yes. in the way he's described it. The only other attribute would be commitment that I would add to that as well. A demonstrated commitment to the individual, but I think that's all it. So awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even something years ago, when the Army was a different type of Army and you had leadership, some, I'm not going to say all, you know, generalize it, but there was the constant yelling at someone, and not everyone receives or can produce or is productive by yelling. Some it works, and then others you have to like really sit down and say, okay, let's go through and what it is that you need to do versus the yelling approach or the hard approach. So tough love works, and some works, some others really work on the aspect of teaching, coaching, mentoring versus mm-hmm. screaming and then try to figure it out later on your own.
Right.
I couldn't agree more. So Mr. Whitaker, could you provide an example of how mentorship has positively impacted leadership and team dynamics in your experience or in organizations that you've observed? I mean, it could be on the football
sure.
field or even in the working in law.
Sure. So I've seen a couple of situations where it's been formalized, where they've assigned, actually said, okay, you're going to work with, yeah. you know, folks have said, I'm willing to be a mentor, and others have said, I'd like to be mentored. And so they've been paired up and had that. I had that in the law firm when I was a young attorney and had a partner who really saw me through a lot of things. And then I've also seen it more formally kind of in the NFL when you've got Tony Dungy, who chose Herm Edwards, and then Jim Caldwell as his assistant head coach, and he started to hand off things to them and in some ways made things more challenging for Tony, because all of a sudden he can't just call the NFL league office and deal with whatever the issue might be. He's actually going to have Herm do it. Right. And Tony's going to kind of walk him through it. And as Herm grows and develops and all that, and of course it worked out great. But then also informally, there have just been ways in which you see that, and where it's strong, and where I think you have a stronger organization because you're building leaders for the sustainability of the organization. And so I think when you've got it, even informally, it's a much stronger organization throughout that I've seen.
Mr. Famaga?
Well, I've been a recipient of informal mentoring, and I will tell you, I didn't fully appreciate it at the time, but its impact on me was pretty significant. And it was just, an individual, a rank or two higher than me, that said, hey, look, let's just sit down and talk, and I'm going to walk you through some things that maybe your future could hold. And I'd ask you to consider it, and then let's have a conversation about it and how it fits into where you want to be or what you want to do in your life. And so that worked very, very well for me personally, and I have I've had the opportunity to support others. And generally speaking, and this is probably a self-criticism, they have come to me and asked, yes, versus me recognizing that I could perhaps do that by saying, hey, look, there's a young man or woman that perhaps I could assist, much like was done for me, to enable them to go forward. And then the last thing I'd just share is, just from a leadership environment, I had this squadron commander once. You know, you got six troop commanders. They're all very competitive at the captain rank. And he sat us down over a lunch his wife prepared, uncommon. You know, we weren't in a dining facility, but we went to his quarters at Fort Bliss. And he sat us down and he said, okay, here's what I want you to understand. We're a team. Okay, and there's a standard that I want you to achieve. And if you all achieve the standard, that's the best of all outcomes. Yes. So help each other achieve the standard for whatever the task is versus trying to one-upsmanship the other individual. And he was, to your point, he was looking at it from the organizational aspect of mentoring us to be team players and how the organization and all the 1,100 soldiers in it would benefit from team play. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me as well, just a very unique leadership experience in a very informal setting that every one of us then became sort of less focused on our own organization and more focused on the overall organization of the cavalry squadron. Very interesting.
And I would even add that a lot more common today is you have, you have juniors coming up asking, hey,
that's right,
would you be my mentor? Mm-hmm. Which was very unheard of 20 years ago. It was correct, like, you just had to figure it out, and now you have juniors asking, and it's like, what's this asking mentorship? But, it's a role that, as an example, as a leader, you have to accept.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So can't imagine saying no.
Yeah. So as far as Mr. Formiga, so is how do mentor leaders effectively recover from mistakes? And what role does humility play in this process?
Well, first of all, I think humility is a key ingredient in this. I mean, if you can't recognize as a leader that you are fallible and you're going to make mistakes and you're going to learn from it, but you got to own up to it. And the absolute never do is attribute it to someone else or something else. Mm-hmm. Just own up to it is what I have found to be most important for my personal and professional growth, as well as what I have most admired in leaders have been faced with similar situations. So I think humility is a key ingredient in that as well.
Okay, absolutely.
And Nathan, do you have anything to add? Or
well, I do. I think humility is critical to leadership, effective leadership in general. And one of the things I've always dealt with, and it's my personality, but for a long time I thought humility was tearing myself down, right? And whatever accomplishments, I was the accidental author, or hey, I was in the right place at the right time, or hey, I'm educated above my intelligence, all of which may be true. But that's not necessarily humility as much as it's looking at, you know, I have something I can learn today from Gary, from Michael, from everybody I'm running into.
Yeah.
I can learn today from whoever it is because they have things to offer. And so seeing that then, and then this idea of, can you trust me, right? Am I going to own up to my mistakes? Am I vulnerable enough to say, you know, I don't have to spill everything, right? As a leader, I got to figure out what's relevant, what's not. But if I'm not willing to own my mistakes and say, hey, and as Mike said, that's powerful when somebody says, hey, that's my bad.
Yeah.
And I realize then, wow, I can make mistakes. Two, I can trust that person because they're going to own it and they're not going to pin it on me or somebody else. So I think it's critical to effective leadership and mentoring.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And then again, when it comes to, you know, team discipline, how can a mentor leader strike the difference or balance between accountability and then fostering a private or positive growth environment?
Yeah, so I first of all, I want to build a little bit on what Nathan was saying there in terms of being trusted as a leader. And I think when we talk about mentorship, there is the I am mentoring by the way I act and through my examples on a day-to-day basis as well, okay? And hopefully in a positive way,
yes.
But we can learn from bad actions of leaders as well. But I think that's really important. And so when you see in someone else a challenge, and it sounds like a blinding flash of the obvious, but it isn't always this way. The best approach usually always is a confidential environment in which you're going to have a conversation with that individual, non-confrontational,
right?
About, hey, what did we learn from what just happened there? How can you improve from this? How does it affect the organization? Have you considered? And I think it's as much about trying to draw out from an individual as a mentor, as a supervisor, you know, those kinds of reflective thoughts from the individual. And again, I'll underline, you know, while oftentimes we might want to strike out in a public forum when we're disappointed, you know, the example you must set, and we try to live by, is suppress that frustration, mm-hmm. and have a conversation in a calm, cool environment confidentially with the individual or the individuals if it's a group challenge that we had. So that's kind of how I have witnessed and attempted to act in those kinds of situations.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned trust, and in speaking on trust, we're held to our word, and with our word and our actions comes the trust eventually. And we're often fact-checked instantly with smartphones and it's what you say, and it's like, you know, people pull up the phone, it's like, oh, okay, you know, you see the head nod like confirming, or it's like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Something that in my military experience, when I was in, and a mentor told me, was your platoon is not your platoon until you're referred to as my LT. Because you go from being the LT to all of a sudden the transition comes my LT or our LT. That's my experience of team discipline and the conveyance of when trust comes in and then you've become now the example, mm-hmm. as opposed to the new guy.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So, there are notes that I have here because all of what we have to talk about, I wanted to gather it and make sure that we touched on it. But for Nathan, could you share with any strategies or techniques that a mentor leader can use to inspire their team members to follow them willingly and perform their best without resorting to intimidation tactics?
Right. So I think it ties into everything we've been talking about with trust, with vulnerability, with the like. Intimidation works, right? It works at some level. I mean, I will do whatever it takes to avoid the pain. If you are intimidating me, if you are right, I mean, I'm going to do something to make this moment end, whether it's physical pain, psychological pain, right? But as soon as you take your thumb off me, I'm going to escape, right? I'm going to do whatever it takes to avoid this. If it means I get out of your command, if I do it, I'm going to, whatever it takes, I'm going to make sure I don't run into you in the hall, whatever it is. So intimidation works, but only for a very, I think, short period, and it runs out. And so as you talked about earlier, with differing coaching styles and I think it's been progress to get to a place where there's more collaboration, there's more teaching, there's more understanding versus the old yelling and at least that's my own personal, because I didn't, you know, I played two sports, neither one terribly well in college, and didn't respond great too. I needed kind of somebody to walk alongside me and pat me on the back, and so when I got yelled at, it was not a great, I didn't flourish under that. So I think all those things are helpful. Now, what does it take? I think it takes a lot of the same things that we see in effective leaders. I think, you know, mentors who explain the mission, right? Explain, here's where we're headed. Here's why this matters. Here's why we're a part of this team. And you know, we saw it. I saw it with one of the teams I was with. We had a fantastic season. And we fell a game short of the Super Bowl. And the next day got an email from the owner saying, you know, unfortunately, this season didn't work out as planned. But hopefully next year, you know, we'll be successful. And I thought, this is so deflating, right? We went 14-2. We won the, you know, we fell a game short. An amazing season. And to say that was a failure, that means 31 of the 32 always fail. Yeah. And then if that's your mission, then how does somebody in the accounting department ever find any sort of mission and passion and whatever it takes to buy into? And so that kind of made me step back and think, all right, what's a better mission? How can we do this better? And thankfully Tony and some others did. But it's this question of how do I get people to embrace it, to buy in, to want to be a part of this, versus then if there isn't, then I'm just going to intimidate them and make them and force them. So a long answer to that question, but Gary, I think there's a lot of things underlying it.
Absolutely. And the bad image that can be portrayed from intimidation, as long as it's scaled and measured, as like you said, it can be effective. But if it's your go-to and your only, you know, every problem is a nail, you're the hammer and you're coming in, I mean, it's only going to work for so long.
And that's different than, I didn't mean to jump in, but different than the accountability that Michael talked about a minute ago, because that's important, right? We have to have, you know, we talk all the time about fail early and often in business and whatever. And well, if we are not learning from the failure, then it may not be helpful. And so that accountability is a sense to say, okay, we're going to try to grow. We're going to try to get better. We're going to try to be better tomorrow than we were today. And so what do we need to do for that? I'll sit down and talk to you. And so, but if it becomes, I'm getting hammered and I'm, you know, I've become the nail to your hammer,
yeah,
then that's different than being held accountable and getting a chance to grow. So anyway, sorry.
Let me just add on a little bit here. So I'll say this with complete certainty. I don't think there's any justification inside of training and doctrine command headquarters or perhaps the centers of excellence, with the exception of possibly the challenges that drill sergeants have in taking civilians and making them into soldiers, for there to be intimidation.
Right.
Okay. There are episodes in combat in which that may be necessary, but in this environment, not needed. I think what is most important, And the intimidation that I'd be referencing would be like, I'm in your face and you're going to do it or else. What we tend to do that is intimidation also is hold something over your head. Mm. Okay. And I think the first thing a mentor and a leader needs to ask before they do that, and hold over your head is, I asked you for this, you failed to provide it. That, therefore, your rating is going to suffer. The first thing would be, okay, did I clearly communicate my expectations for whatever it is? Mm-hmm. Okay, did you fully understand them in that communication? Did you read it back to me? And have I set you up for success with the resources, perhaps, and the time that you need to do it before, you know, we get to that conversation? And once we have an agreement on all those things, then I think there's, you know, We should be at a point of trust that I trust you to do what we've agreed can be done in the amount of time. So again, I think in this environment for this audience,
exactly.
I think, you know, we should appreciate what intimidation could be and how to avoid ever having to use it as a supervisor inside of this environment. But again, from a mentorship perspective, for you know, peer mentors, we talk about that, and for leader mentors here as well. I think it's how you exemplify these things that is how you are mentoring others in the process as well.
Absolutely. And Mr. Frommeiker, Ms. Whitaker, you know, in your view, you know, what is the secret? I don't know if there is a secret or not, but what is the secret to building trust and rapport among mentors and mentees, and then how does that contribute to having a successful mentoring culture? Start off, Mr.
Sure. Okay, I think the first is there's got to be trust, and I think that trust starts with this is a confidential situation. Okay, you, and generally speaking, those folks that I mentor, and there's probably half a dozen or so, I never have a conversation with their supervisors about them. Okay, this is between me and you, and me trying to share, you know, 40 plus years of experience to help you be where you want to be in your life. Okay. And it's only between us. So you can open up, you know, share, et cetera, so that we have a learning environment of trust. And then I think the other piece of it is it has to be a two-way street. Okay. And much to Nathan's point, I am amazed at how much I'm learning from mentees in the process of being a mentor. There's one of my mentees who will come to me with questions at the end of the sessions that are really thought-provoking, and she's attempting to pull out from me things I had not even thought about sharing, right? But that two-way communication is just invaluable. And then I guess the last thing is you need to be genuinely vested in it. It isn't just something I'm doing. It is, I care and I want to see the individual improve, be whatever it is they want to be or however they want to be that person, okay? So trust, confidentiality, and then the last thing is commitment in my mind through investment.
What Michael said. But also, just through the standpoint of, I think there has to be a lens. I think trust is critical. But it even could be, you even could be mentored by a direct supervisor. So then you've got some other wrinkles. But I think this idea that we're doing this for you, the mentee, right? My goal here is to help you grow. It may help the organization. Yes, it may help. And I think it totally does. As I help you grow in whatever you're doing. I may lose you. You may grow out beyond where I am. You may grow out beyond whatever it is, and that's okay. So that means, I gotta find somebody else. But that's okay because it's about you, right. And I'm focused on you. Now, am I open-minded enough and willing enough to learn from the mentee? And all? I think that's all critical as well, to understand that I don't have all the answers, and I'm trying to help you, and I'm trying to help you understand, but we're kind of just walking each other home through life, right, at some point, that we're trying to help each other kind of get through this. So I think those are the critical, this idea that it's designed to help the mentee. It's not, I'm not looking to do this in order to help my production as a leader or whatever it is. I'm actually helping you grow. It may do all those things, and I think it will. But that's not my focus. My focus is you. And I think then as they understand that and that sense of trust and growth, then I think that helps that relationship greatly.
Yeah, I had, it's not a long story, but it's an example that I learned the trust in the building and the rapport. Years ago, I had a platoon sergeant, and he loved to run. He loved to ruck march. He loved all that physical stuff, airborne, air assault, 82nd kind of guy, just loved that stuff. And one Saturday morning, we were supposed to be off. We thought we were off. It was like, hey, we're going to go on a 5-mile run around Fort Moore, Sand Hill area. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. But, you know, he's like, it's all voluntary. You don't have to do it. But, you know, it's the military. Of course, you kind of feel that peer pressure. So we got up. We ran the 5 miles. And in the back of his truck, he had a cooler of Gatorade and refreshments after the run. And that was a team-building event. We went from the storming to the forming and the building of a team. And he did other things, but it was that incident where I learned that I could trust this guy. And any other volunteer type function, I was like, well, there might be some Gatorade involved for us. But nonetheless, it was him bringing us into the fold. And it wasn't like him staying back and was like, you guys run, I'm just going to stay back. No, he was leading the charge. Mm-hmm. And that's what comes with that secret to building trust and rapport.
Mm-hmm.
My little experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And as a Gainesville guy, I appreciate you throwing Gatorade into the mix. We're very
lots of Gators
there. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, but that was a great moment in time that I can remember. So for both of you, if you could provide examples of organizations or leaders who have successfully implemented mentoring programs and positive outcomes that, outcome that they've achieved a result. You have any examples to share, or?
So there's an organization I'm involved with now. I've been doing a 2-year leadership cohort with. It's an organization that in some ways the leadership is aging, so they're trying to figure out, okay, we need to build some leaders, and so it's been really focused on that. And they have gone through and said, let's find though some established folks who have been in the industry for a long time, and they've paired them up, and so people have made visits and spoken a bunch on the phone and virtually and the like, but actually made in-person visits across the country. And it seems to have been very successful in helping this next generation kind of figure out how to take over leadership of this trade association. And then the other organization that I just love watching as an outsider is the Seattle Seahawks. Okay. And, you know, I never worked for the Seahawks, worked elsewhere, but Pete Carroll has done a great job with his coaches, bringing them in and then letting them go. And so they now attract. I mean, if Seattle makes you an offer, you kind of go. And because they know that, and they can go laterally. I mean, we've seen people leave Seattle to go to a college job, or even to somebody left as a coordinator in Seattle and went to a position coach elsewhere. And so most of the league would say, oh my gosh, that's a, you know, why would they voluntarily go down? But they know, and then they come back to Seattle. And so Pete is attracting great talent because folks know I can go there, I can learn, and then either I can continue to grow with the Seahawks or then I can bounce somewhere else. So that's been a fantastic example for me of this very open, because a lot of us, I know in Tampa, you'd find yourself, or in Jacksonville, you'd find yourself thinking, gosh, we've put in 2 years teaching this person how we do things in Tampa. Yeah. And how we, if they go, and so you're either grudgingly or you're blocking them. I got blocked once, which was okay. That started me off writing books instead of working for the Chicago Bears. I still find myself going, I can't believe I didn't go to Chicago. And then I'm like, wait, I'm writing books. It's okay. But just a different approach, very open-handed, like this is for your benefit. We're going to bring you in and we're going to help you grow. And I think that's really powerful when an organization does that well.
Glad to. So I'll give an example that is up and running well and has for the Army for a number of years, and that's the Mission Command Training Program, formerly the Battle Command Training Program. And the senior mentors that are generally retired general officers that we bring back in to perform the tasks we've been talking about with division commanders, 2-star generals, corps commanders, 3-star generals, and their subordinate general officers as they go through a crucible that's called a warfighting exercise. Mm-hmm. And these mentors, they're called senior mentors or gray beards, if you will, they establish the kind of rapport we've been talking about. It's confidential. It leads to humility and an appreciation of what works or what doesn't work in your leadership style as a division or corps commander, and for your organization, so that you as the leader of that organization can improve yourself and go back and understand how to improve, and doing it from the perspective of no one in your chain of command. I mean, this guy and this individual is not going to report back to the chief of staff of the Army that Formica is a terrible officer and shouldn't be promoted to whatever the rank is. So I think our Army has benefited from that kind of mentorship formally inside of the training of these formations. I think in TRADOC, we're on a path to get there. And I mean in the headquarters. And the TRADOC G1 team has put together 8 types of mentoring programs that we've just rolled out and are getting off the ground, ranging from the formal mentoring that I've talked about, in which we align a mentor with an individual that wants to be mentored. And what's really kind of cool about it is you go through some personality assessments so that you can understand your strengths and weaknesses, and you share that with the individual that you're mentoring as well, so that there's some compatibility. All the way down to reverse mentoring, in which a subordinate can come up to Formica and coach me on coach word, on some things that I'm challenged with, the always used example for us old folks, or technology as an example, and perhaps provide some insights from a bottom up about, you know, life inside of TRADOC and what could be better from their perspective. So I think there's an example of how the Army and Training and Doctrine Command with the Senior Mentorship Program has worked, and I think we've done some reflection inside of ourselves, and I think we've established a program that will improve over time in the eight various types of mentoring that we want to build inside of Training and Doctrine Command as well.
Absolutely. And while we're talking, a question came up from Facebook, and it's, I'm a retired military. How do I move forward with mentoring young women who want to serve?
I think first of all, it's a wonderful question, and I appreciate and would assume you're a soldier for life, and this is exactly what we would hope our retired community does, is reach out to, the first thing I would say is, make sure there's a clear understanding of what that service means in the Army from your perspective, or we can re-green you, if you will. What are the gates that an individual needs to get through to be accepted into the Army, okay, through recruiting and then into basic combat training or the officer corps, and understand through, you know, that individual's perspective where her strengths and weaknesses are, and perhaps what are the opportunities to improve those, whether they be physical or they be in test taking or whatever it is. And then I guess the last thing, and I don't know if the retired individual is a female or a male, but I think it's really important, if it's female, to share firsthand understanding of what service in the Army may have been, where it is, and where it's going in relation to females in all the combat arms, given equal access and advantage to, not that we don't have things we need to improve and we're committed to it, but we are committed to it to inspire as well.
Absolutely.
Great question.
Okay, that's one there. And this is for Mr. Formica here. Okay. So how can TRADOC and its civilian professionals begin to cultivate a mentoring culture effectively? And then what steps? I think you mentioned the cohort program.
I'd ask, and we have a civilian human resource directorate homepage, but go to the page and look up the opportunities that we have, and they're displayed because Nathan was coming. Sort of kind of made this the month of mentoring. They're displayed prominently throughout the headquarters as well. Reach out to the leadership in, run by Ebony Murray, and we'll help get you down that path. Break. I would also commend that, you know, there's an opportunity for your supervisor, you to reach to your supervisor or an echelon above your supervisor. I know every GO and SES in this command is committed to this, and they'd be willing to support if you're interested to doing this. I guess the last thing I want to say on this is, and Nathan and I had a conversation earlier this morning, we are committed to improving the skills of our supervisors inside of Training and Doctrine Command, okay? And so the Supervisor Development Course and Civilian Education System are there to help supervisors be the best that they can be for our Army civilians. And a reflection of that is the genuineness and the comprehensiveness of the individual development plans that every Army civilian is supposed to have, which should be tracking a course for the next 3 to 5 years, what they want to be, where they want to be, what developmental opportunities they want to have, et cetera. And so if that's happening, I think we're on the right path. And so we're doing the dipsticking to see what percentage have IDPs, but that doesn't get at what is the quality of it. And so I would just challenge every supervisor and Army civilian professional and soldier / officer, non-commissioned officer, to take a hard look at those things as well. Thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, sir. I have a question to ask, because it has anything to do with mentorship. I mean, even though we're on mentorship, but it does lead into writing and what goes into writing a book, and what feedback have you gained back from writing even more books? My thing. I know it's not something that's along the mentorship, but when you write and you put your heart into something, it does affect other people positively or in some kind of way.
We hope.
We hope. That's the hope. But what led you to write your first book and then your subsequent additional books?
So the first one was, it actually was this exact topic, is that I had been in some great situations and some really tough, toxic situations. And toward the end of my 1 year with Tony, Tony tells everybody we worked together for 2 years with the Bucks, and I remind him it was one really, really, really long year. But toward the end of our year together, I just said to Tony how much I appreciated him being the way he was throughout the rest of us are terrified, then we're relieved, then we're terrified, you know, week to week, whether we're winning or losing and what we're reading in the paper. And Tony said, you know, Nathan, I think sometimes God wants there to be a circus so that people can see there's another way to react, that this is something bigger I'm a part of. This is not, it doesn't matter what's happening today, that this is, and he's got this kind of horizon he's looking out toward. And he said, my job is to coach this team. And today it's this team. And tomorrow may be a different team. And I'll figure that out then. And so that started me on this thought of, you know what, I've got so many friends who have really, really ineffective leadership they're dealing with, and they could help by hearing Tony's story. And so that was it. So it took me 3 years to talk him into it. Tony said, I got nothing to share, nobody wants to read it. So it took me 3 years, speaking of humble, took me 3 years to talk Tony into it, which is a nice way of saying I was unemployed, having been fired by the Bucks and was trying to figure out what was next, and passed up an offer to go to the Seahawks, which I then looked back and kicked myself. But then Tony finally, I talked him into writing his memoir. But then I still had this thought of, which has a lot of leadership concepts, of course. But then we kept talking about leadership, and finally the publisher came back on the third book and said, what do you think about leadership? And Tony said, I don't know if I have anything to share. And I said, Tony, I've got 3 years worth of notes of your leadership and why it matters. And so anyway, that's a really long answer to say, though, I really wrote the first book feeling like it maybe could help a handful of people. And now that first book has 3 million copies in print. And Tony still gets, you know, I got a call not too long ago for somebody who said, I realized I was being a terrible husband. Yeah. And I read your book and realized, and you're thinking, wow, I didn't think in 2023 I was going to get any sort of thank you for something we did in 2007. So anyway, really long answer. It's very affirming, but it really matters to me, the message, right? I've had other people say, hey, you could write about, or I've got a score to settle. Can we write a book? And I really want to affirm and help others grow. And so it's been a great partnership with Tony, with James Brown of CBS Sports, with Tim Tebow. So I've been fortunate to be able to work with some of these folks and share some messages that I think then can be replicated and can, you know, again, it's totally intimidating, by the way, to come on to this fort and to be with you all and to be talking, because nobody does leadership better than the Army, right? I mean, you guys study it, you analyze it, you've got 8 different mentorship paths, right? I'm just sitting here going, well, we kind of did it like this in Tampa. So to be able to even share it here and to bring a unique perspective maybe is really gratifying, intimidating, but gratifying. And so so it's been a great journey to be on, and so I appreciate you asking that. It's always fun to get any feedback that your words did kind of land somewhere and land positively. So
absolutely. And looking at team sports and even the military, there's really not that much difference as it comes to leadership and mentorship. It's just a different approach, or just knowing that there in the military there are lives at stake, and whereas in sports and team sports it's a championship or in some cases a job that's at stake.
Right. I mean, we all use the terminology, but at least in football, hey, we're going to war.
Right.
We knew we weren't, and thank God for that. And so even as you're talking, right, I'm thinking about, I should share the story about Coach Spurrier making us run the stadium steps at 5:30 in the morning in the rain, and realize then I'll get halfway through that story, and you're going to be like, I've got 150 stories. Yeah. So, but I think there is some crossover, right? There's some parallels as far as how we treat people, how we get people to follow, how we... You know, one of the things I love about your plan, where everybody can walk through this plan of personal development, is that when we try to get people to buy into why we're doing what we're doing, so often I feel stuck where I am, right? My first year, I left my coffee mug. You gave me a coffee mug at the last stop, and I left it. And so I've already forgotten one thing, but we laughed when I was in Jacksonville that my first year, they said, hey, we'll get you into the negotiation, but you got to handle team travel first. Well, I can't even keep track of my mug, right? And I'm supposed to keep track of the team. But I really had to own that role. I did not want to do, you know, the George Costanza assistant to the traveling secretary kind of role, but they needed me to do it and be good. And so even though but this idea of having a personal development, at least they had told me, hey, here's what's out there for you. Yeah. This idea that we need you to be good at what you're doing right now. It doesn't have to be where you end, and there might be a path forward, but do this and do really well at what you're doing, and then we'll help you grow through mentoring, through other things. Yeah. And I think that's really important, really critical, whether it's team sports, the military, whatever.
Yeah, no, well, first of all, thanks for sharing the book experience, the author experience, all the other, and they're all helpful to us to visualize through perhaps a different lens the value of this. I'll just pick up on, and you and I had this conversation yesterday. You spoke earlier about character being the number one ingredient Tony Dungy, and we absolutely believe that. As I shared with you yesterday, you know, it's character, competence, and commitment, and they are in order of priority. We want individuals to be individuals of character in the United States Army. And the competence is really this individual development plan. How do I demonstrate to you that I want you to be the best that you can be in the tasks that you have, and where do you want to be, and how do we set you up for that? Because you know, you might not want to be static. And I really appreciated your statement that I might develop you to the point that you leave this organization. And we see that frequently. And the selfless thing to do on behalf of the organization is to do just that, to get you to the point where, you know, it's time for you to do something else. And perhaps it's the Pentagon or it's in a subordinate command inside a TRADOC. But that's the best thing for the Army and for you professionally as well. And then, as I shared with you yesterday, I think there's a direct relationship between those two. If you operate in an organization that is values-based with individuals of character, if they demonstrate their desire for you to improve your competence, then they will be committed to the organization more fully than operating in a terrible place with people that don't care about you at all. Yeah. So that's I think the similarities are there as well, and I appreciate how you have shared your perspectives with us.
Great. You know, and it lends itself to, you know, what you're both saying. You know, young company grade officers, they want to command immediately, soon. It's like they get, you know, you get pinned the colloquial, the railroad tracks, the captain bars, and it's like, I want to command. And you're told you have to do something in your mind as less desirable, not knowing that it's in preparation of when you do take that seat, you understand the administrative roles, you understand the logistics role, you understand communication roles. You know, I don't want to work in the S1, why? I don't want to work in the S4, that's logistics, why? Not knowing that your leader, your boss, your mentor is preparing you for the time when it comes, and you have to know what a flipple is, or what a UFR is, you know, filling out those monthly reports. Mm-hmm. So there's always something, you're doing something, you may not see the positive end result in your mind, but the mentor, the leader, sees all of that, see that five moves ahead for you to where you don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize it until you've done it, and then you get into that chair, and it's like, oh, now I understand why I had to do X, Y, and Z. They were preparing me for this.
So I agree with everything that you said and offer, because I lived the same life, and I think you have as well. You know, we will better serve all if the mentor is forthright and saying, look, these are the things I think you need to do to set the conditions for you, okay, versus, you know, the hidden hand pulling the strings, making things happen. Then you get the other end and you have the epiphany. Oh, that really worked out well. I get it. So I think that's the challenge that we all have, is to be more direct in communicating some of those things. And as I admitted, you know, I think looking down inside the organization and identifying individuals that perhaps could use. For, at first, you see have the attributes that you're looking for, and B, that could use the mentoring to advance and build that relationship. I think is something that we can all do better at. And so that it isn't a surprise at the end of company command, oh, that's why I got all that experience. But
absolutely,
that's where the Army was. That's where perhaps TRADOC is, and we perhaps can get better than that.
Absolutely. So we're coming close up to the end, and I just want to go ahead and tie everything together. And to the audience that's viewing, thank you all for taking the time to join us today and sharing what mentor leadership means to you. And let's go around. Any final thoughts, Mr. Formica?
I want to thank Nathan for traveling from the warm weather of Florida, Gainesville, up to here to share with us his thoughts and his perspective and experiences. Very, very helpful to us as we launch off this campaign, this month of mentoring, if you will. And again, hats off to you, Gary, for pulling this together, okay? You've been a great architect, and you've helped us all in this dialogue, and the communications director for supporting the command with these kinds of activities on a routine basis. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Mr. Whitaker?
Yeah, so just one last thought, I think, on the whole mentoring-mentee relationship, and I think it's just important for both of them to enter it with this idea that we can learn and grow, as Mike talked about earlier, this idea, I'll try not to drop Gainesville. We're at the end. I'm only going to drop Gainesville one more time. But good buddies in a band, Sister Hazel, that's out of Gainesville, a rock band, have a song, Change Your Mind. And if you want to quit fighting the same old battles with yourself, change your mind. And this idea that we can all learn at whatever stage of life we're in. And so I think so often as a mentor, we think, okay, now I'm going to do you a favor and help, whatever. Some people come into that, and that's okay. Because you are doing somebody a favor, but you're also going to get something out of it, and you're going to have a chance to learn and grow. And to the extent we can realize that there's a good chance I'm going to learn today from everybody I run into, that's a really freeing place to be. And so I think for mentees to be open enough and brave enough to say, I'd like to be mentored, because it does take a little bit of courage to reach out and say, would you be willing to, and hope that they answer in the affirmative. I think there's some open-mindedness that needs to come from both sides and have this idea that we all can change and grow and learn together.
Absolutely. Very thanks. Thank you all again for joining us, Mr. Formica. Thanks for sharing. And before we sign off, just would like to say we've heard effective mentor leadership and its effect on the private and public sector. Mentor leadership is a method for developing the best leaders of tomorrow. It's an important and critical piece for any organization's mentor leadership program. You know, learning from seeing, learning from doing lends itself to networking, and sponsorship mentor leadership comes with a great network of leaders. The mentor can push a high-performing mentee in the direction of other leaders who can help develop and manage that growth. And we'll be back in a few months with the next LPD discussion, so please stay tuned on the TRADOC social media platforms for the exact details of that LPD. Thanks again for joining us, and as always, victory starts here.
Cool. Very good.